This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's Dirt. I want to thank you for taking some time out to listen to the podcast of our show, brought to you by Les Schwab Tires, doing the right thing since 1952.
This is Dirt and Sprague.
Now Atlanta has them first and second for Dansby. And a high fly ball, wallop left center field and deep. Track, wall, it is gone! That's how you make them pay for a sloppy inning. Dansby Swanson just hit a three-run homer, and the Braves have put a five spot on the Giants in the second.
With Andy Dirt Johnson and Brendan Sprague.
In the air to right field, Mancini going back on the ball by Torres. Way back, up, and... I don't even know. Goodbye, home run. I mean, last two at-bats, he's hit home runs numbers 11 and 12 on the season. And now has 10 home runs against the Orioles this year. Just amazing.
Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
Two in the Rose City. Time for Dirt and Sprague on Portland Sports Leader 1080 The Fan. Brandon Sprague and Eater Johnson in with you on this Thursday afternoon. Despite the weather turning its back on us, we're showing up for you.
We're still here, although I'm kind of ready for a nap. I'm not going to lie. I need a post-lunch nap right now. You brought in about 800 pounds of Chinese food for the office to eat.
Was there like a family reunion that got canceled or something?
I don't know. There was about 800 cartons of Chinese food back there. So, of course, when there's free food, you take advantage of free food. You're not going to turn it down.
Not turning it down. Tasty vittles.
You have second lunch. You eat your second lunch, and I might have overdone it. Now I'm kind of ready for a post-Chinese food nap.
We had some listeners text in a few days ago that they play a drinking game, that when I mention money or something else, they drink. Well, get ready to drink here. I said that I like to spend my money on things that I like or that I care about. And one of those is like family and food, or two of those, I should say, are family and food. It was my daughter's third birthday yesterday.
Yeah, big birthday party.
And, well, it really wasn't, though. It was like just immediate family. Saturday's the big unicorn party thing.
Thanks for the invite.
A lot of pink cupcakes.
You got your dog to play with the kids? I don't know what to do in this situation.
Well, Uncle Dirt can't come hang out
Uncle
for
Dirt,
an afternoon.
Yeah, you're more than welcome. I was actually saving you a few hours of your life. And like, I'm at a child's birthday party. This is terrible.
That's all right. I won't be there.
But we had the birthday party, and with my immediate family, there's about 16. Like, I'm talking obviously the wife, the kids, and then her sisters, their families, et cetera, and then the in-laws come over. And so I'm like, okay, 16 people, everybody's going to be real hungry. What I normally do when I order Chinese, listeners, I don't know if you've ever been stuck in a similar situation. Usually when I order Chinese, what I end up doing is not ordering enough.
You underorder, yeah.
It's like, oh, I wanted sweet and sour chicken, but it's gone.
Right.
Oh, the lo mein's gone? You only got two boxes? What the hell? So I said, 16 people, we're going to be hungry. Let's go. I ordered four orders of lo mein, four sweet and sour chickens, two kung pao, two Szechuan, and I think that might have been it. And then fried rice came with the chicken orders. I said, okay, this is going to be a lot of food, but that should do it for us. Well, the order comes, and of the 16, I would say about seven were there when the food got there. We all started eating and realized quickly, this is a lot of Chinese food. The other people showed up, and right before they started eating, my in-laws come, and they open the door, and in they walk with 16-piece buckets from KFC.
What are you doing, family?
My sister-in-law specifically told my father-in-law, do not bring food. Yeah. He's ordering Chinese.
We got Chinese. It's all we need.
But I guess it's a cultural thing because they have never showed up to a family event without bringing something.
What are we doing
here? Who doesn't
here?
Love the 21 herbs and spices or whatever it
look,
is?
Look, I'm okay with KFC. But in the moment, I had just spent $143 on Chinese food.
Finger licking, finger licking, finger licking, finger licking.
Then they brought it in. Then they proceeded to eat what they brought, not touch my Chinese food.
Wow.
Which I gave them a lot of grief over. And then the others, what would I say, eight people?
Yeah.
They ate KFC.
Nobody wanted your Chinese food.
My living room downstairs is not huge. So like my kitchen, living room are kind of just one room. And I'm just standing there and I'm looking at everybody eating KFC. And I'm like, I hate you. I hate you. And I hate you.
I got 800 cartons here. Nobody's touching any of them.
So I said, look, I don't want to throw Chinese food away.
No.
I spent money on this. I'm really mad that I spent all this money on it, but it's not going to go to waste. So I brought it to work. Lunch for everybody.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you. I enjoyed it. The whole office, I think, enjoyed your Chinese food. There were a few that try and be health conscious, which, come on, you got to eat Chinese food every now and then.
I knew some people were going to play that card. Oh, I'm trying to eat healthy.
Trying to wash my figure.
Yeah, fortunately, I found it before I dug into my lunch, so I got lunch for tomorrow.
Oh, you
already.
Brought lunch. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I ate both. But anyways,
well, that's so, why you need a nap.
You know, at I will say this, though, to defend the people at your party. And if I'm at that party, I'm likely going to dive in Chinese food because it's just better than KFC in my mind. But the only argument that I can make pro KFC, a lot easier to eat.
Way easier.
Already in the bucket. You don't even really need a plate.
You just
grab out of the bucket. You grab a wing, a drum, whatever you want, and you just start chowing down on it. Then you throw the bone away. A lot easier than getting a plate, you know, dump it a little bit out, a little here, a little there. You got to use a fork, and then you got a dish to clean up afterwards. So the ease of KFC is a lot simpler, but there's no doubt Chinese food is better.
Now, I get where you're coming from here, but you still have to remember my situation. Like, it's my house.
Yeah.
It's my kid's party,
yeah.
And I bought the Chinese. So while you might be more in the mood for KFC, Chinese is what you should be eating out of simple respect.
Yeah, you lean in the direction of whose party it is and you bought the Chinese food.
Now, I've been to several white parties in my life because, well, I'm white. I'm 25% Japanese, but I didn't have a dad growing up, so I'm white. When I went to white parties, unless there was something already discussed, people just show up and they have good times. I'm speaking for all white people right now.
Sure.
I don't care. What I've learned being married to a Vietnamese family, their culture, you go to a party, you better bring something. Wine, a food, a dessert.
Mm.
You're bringing something. You do not show up to a party and not have something. Whereas the white people, we just show up and assume you have everything covered. Yeah. And I'm walking in and we're drinking and eating. And I don't care who bought what, but I didn't need to do anything.
See, now here's what I would do. When I'm invited to parties, you first check, can I bring any food? And usually the answer is always no, like we got it taken care of. I still, though, will bring booze. Like even if they're like, hey, don't worry about it.
Really?
I'll bring a bottle of wine or a six pack or something, you know, something harder if you're feeling like getting really after
it. But if you showed up to a big party, gentlemen, and you knew this was like an obvious, hey, it's a big barbecue party. Are you walking in with food?
No.
Me either.
No. But I might bring a six-pack.
Sure, and that, if my father-in-law walked in with a case of beer,
like,
I'd be
like, sure, what the hell?
Great, crack them open, have some Chinese food.
This Wednesday just got a little bit better.
But that's not the case in my situation.
Yeah, that's a little aggressive. You don't need to bring food to every family function.
Everything I invite them to, just out of spite and being petty, I might throw parties and may no longer even think of bringing food. And when they show up empty-handed, if ever... Yeah. I'm going to go, you guys really dropped the ball today.
This is on you. Now we have to eat peanut butter sandwiches.
Used to railroad everything else I used to do.
We have nothing prepared. I also do have a hot take on Chinese food about the use of chopsticks when forks are available.
People are the worst.
You know, they are. There's no need. There's no need. What are you trying to show off? Like the simplicity of a fork is so much better than chopsticks. Sprague's back there eating like one kernel of rice at a time with chopsticks. Like, dude, just dig in with a fork, man. Who are you trying to impress?
I like using chopsticks.
You think somebody's
going
to walk
Chinese
by the cubicle and be like, wow, Sprague knows how to use chopsticks. That's so cool.
Maybe it makes
teach me, man.
It makes me feel more authentic.
No,
I don't know.
You're 75% American. Use a damn fork. All right. It's an American utensil.
All right. Let's find out what's on tap.
Dirt and Sprague know what's brewing.
I'm not paid to be bold. I'm paid to be right.
There's a lot of sporting events that you say, oh, I got to go do that.
This is What's on Tap, poured by Pelican Brewing Company, born at the beach on 1080. The Fan.
What's on Tap brought to you on The Fan by Pelican Brewing Company, born at the beach, online at pelicanbrewing.com. Got a good show today. Jonathan Smith's going to be in studio for a half hour with us.
That he is, Bob. Looking forward to it.
Be a lot of fun. Talk some Oregon State football. Of course, we talked about that social media thing that he had with the quote to the beat writer. And so we'll get his thoughts, maybe elaborate a little more on that, because I don't know. I found out the writer didn't think that that was a big deal quote when he got it.
Right.
His angle was more like, you're kind of a prototypical old school guy. But then when he got that quote, it blew up, and the writer, I guess, was caught off guard, is what Nimick told me. And I want to know if Smith expected any backlash to that. Like, if he thought that sounded or read bad when he first said that.
Yeah, and then he kind of shut some people up because, like, a week later, he nabbed a 4-star.
He did. Hey, I said this when we talked about it.
It works, man.
I still think it's a bad look, but it doesn't mean you're not going to win.
Yeah.
It's just it's a free medium to use to recruit.
Right.
I don't get not taking advantage of that.
Right.
So we'll talk with Jonathan Smith about Oregon State's football program today. He'll be in studio at 2:15 till 2:45. Are we going to move up Swag's Plums to 2 o'clock?
I think we're just punting on Plums today.
Yeah, we're just punting.
Okay. Well, I didn't put it on the show sheet, so I just wanted to make sure you guys felt the same way. We will get into some college football news and notes. Dabo said something a couple days ago, and then PJ Fleck said something really stupid.
These coaches are driving me nuts.
These million-dollar coaches and their egos are insane. That's something I do appreciate about Jonathan Smith. He doesn't strike me as a PJ Fleck.
No, he's not rowing the boat, thank God.
We do need to talk about Gary Thorne's call yesterday in the Baltimore Yankee game.
This needs to be played.
God, it's good.
Also, a fun question. If Torres ends up, like, breaking a home run record this year, we should not count it.
Because it's against the Orioles.
He only hits home runs against Baltimore.
Yeah,
like,
he
that
has 10 in the last 11 games against them.
Are you kidding me? I'm pretty sure I could take a Baltimore pitcher deep at this point. It's like a double-A baseball team.
Hey, Michigan in the Fab Five might be back. We'll explain that one. We never got to our Game of Thrones, so I'm going to get to that at 1:15 today. Jason Stark wrote a piece about the Tampa Bay Stadium situation with the Rays. So we'll dive into that a little bit. That's going to be one of our stops on the Daily Ticker. We also will make a stop in Milwaukee for Game 5. We got some NFL news and notes, a lot going on in the National Football League. And we also have the All-NBA stuff to get into as well. Before we get into it, though, I want to start with one of the more controversial hot takes I've seen in a while. And then we'll dive into the Eastern Conference Finals a little bit.
Okay.
All of that is ahead. That's what's on tap for today's show. We're back with more. Happy Thursday. Thanks for listening. Dirt and Sprague with you on 1080 The Fan. I'll get into this a little bit later on in the NFL news or notes, but I just want to, for the audience that may not be sticking around till then, I wanted to read this, and I know he wants this to happen. When we do this, we always get people that text in, you're doing exactly what they want. It's like, well, yeah, sometimes you need to point out people's stupidity. And then we're going to get into the Eastern Conference Finals here. Did you see what Danny Cannell tweeted?
Oh, God, yes, I did.
At 6:30 this morning, he said, when did marijuana become good for you? Crazy how fast certain narratives move in our society with little or no scientific proof.
Oh.
Is it better than opiates? Probably. But let's slow down treating weed like a wonder drug with no downside risks. And he is giving this opinion because Chris Long retired and basically said, dude, I smoke weed all the time. Helped me a lot. Thinks the NFL should be getting rid of that.
Yeah.
And Danny Cannell had to chime in as the get off my lawn, old school football guy knows everything. And the society, it's always society. You notice like old players, when they have these opinions, it's like society is wrong. Society is the problem. It's society's fault.
What's wrong with America?
What is wrong with our country nowadays?
Damn millennials smoking all their weed. Hey, man, Danny. All right, I'm going to let this stand. He's also the guy who doesn't believe football causes any sort of brain issues.
Yeah,
so
him and
What's the Merrill Hodge?
Big time, Merrill Hodge.
Merrill Hodge wrote a whole book on it.
He did.
I tried to get him on the show.
Yeah, there's something happened there. I remember we were trying to reach out and get him on. But if you want to know how Danny Cannell feels, that basically sums it up, and he knows exactly what he's doing with stuff like this. The funny part about it, though, I genuinely think he believes this. Like, he thinks right point.
Yes.
And probably drugs that are addictive and killing Americans in mass numbers all over this country, to say that weed is probably better than that.
How many people have overdosed from weed?
I'm going to have to check. That would be zero. Zero. So.
Well, let's do more research, and we'll find out if weed is truly better than opiates. It's probably too early to tell. I don't think anybody's been studying this stuff lately.
Yeah. You don't need to go like straw man. Like, of course there's doubt. Like, people can get a little addicted to weed. It can have negative impacts on people's lives. Like, of course it's not all sunshine and rainbows when it comes to marijuana. But when you hear former NFL players and football players talk about the benefits, the health impact, I know people in my life who have been through a lot that use it. My parents' dog uses CBD, and it helps him with all of his aches and pains, and it's a lot cheaper and healthier than the medicine he was taking. Like, yes, there are a lot of medical benefits to using marijuana.
Yeah, so I just wanted to throw that out there for the audience that might not be around for the NFL news or notes. Okay, so we got the Daily Ticker coming back at 12:30 today yet again, and this time we get to actually go away from Portland Golden State narratives.
Is it the first non-Blazer Daily Ticker we've had in like 2 months?
It is, and it's two stops to make, so we'll do that coming up in 10 minutes. Eastern Conference Finals, Game 5.
Boom.
As we do so often in basketball, like in football, at least we know at the end of the game we can react properly. Man, the Chiefs look ready to go to a Super Bowl. They just won the AFC. Or, man, the Patriots, they're so annoying. They won another AFC crown. In basketball, the Bucks go up 1-0, and we go, I think this series is only going 5.
It's over.
Then they go up 2, and it's like, I think this might end up being a sweep. And then they lose game 3, and they go, well, they'll win game 4. Then Toronto wins game 4. And now we're like, I don't think the Bucks can respond to this. It's tied 2-2. We always overreact. I'm responsible for this. You are. We all are. It's kind of what it is in basketball. How do you feel about this series, though, 2-2?
It's really hard to get a gauge on it for two reasons. One, Giannis has never been in this moment in his career, and we just don't know how he's going to respond to the pressure, because the last two games of the series did not go well for him. He had his management team responding to what Drake was doing on the sidelines. They were in his head a little bit. He, by the way, airballed a free throw in both Game 3 and Game 4. He went 2 of 7 from the free throw line in Game 3. He went 6 of 10 from the free throw line in Game 4. And that tells me that some of the pressure is starting to get to his head a little bit. He was dunked on a couple of times. So it's really tough to gauge where he's at mentally. Now, you'd expect him to come back with a better performance at home. That's just simply usually what happens, but it's not necessarily a guarantee. And the tough part for Toronto's side of it is, like, how long can Kawhi Leonard do this on clearly what looks like one leg? Like, that dude's banged up. It feels like he's hobbling around the court, and it's still been effective, and they were able to win both games. But you just wonder how long he's going to be able to hold up in this series if they continue to pressure him throughout the course of games. And he's going to need help from his role players, and that's not something that Toronto has been able to rely on consistently over the last couple of years.
Yeah, I'm really curious to watch that, because I think the Bucks, look, we'll see if Toronto can take their defense on the road, but the Bucks had real problems offensively in those two games, especially in that Game 4. Go look at the box score. I mean, sometimes the box score can tell you everything. Kawhi Leonard didn't score 30 points.
No.
If you would have told me that, I wouldn't have thought the Raptors were winning. Kyle Lowry had 25 on 11 shots.
Another great game for him, just like Game 1.
And I give it to him, because we really gave him some crap going into this once he had a few bad games. He doesn't look scared. He just looks like he's finally locked in, and I'm actually happy for him. And their role, Norman Powell's been big behind the three-point line since he started getting minutes. But again, we'll see if it travels.
Yeah.
What I do want to know, though, million-dollar question, is Drake at this game, and does Drake touch Nick Nurse?
Does he have the balls to go into enemy territory? That's a different, because it's one thing when you're at home.
He'll do it in the regular season, but I don't think he does it in the playoffs.
Now, Spike Lee used to do this, right? He would go to Indiana during those great Knicks-Pacers series and sit courtside and get into it with fans a little bit. Jack did it. I remember Jack being at the conference finals in Portland when they were here in 2000. And I think he left the building early one game and they played Hit the Road, Jack, as he was walking out. So some of these guys have the cojones that it takes to go sit courtside in enemy territory. But I don't think Drake wasn't at Game 1 or Game 2, was he?
Not that I remember.
No. I don't, because they would have shown him, and I think I would have remembered him being courtside.
And I'm going to guess, I mean, as long as it's been for the Bucks to get this far in the playoffs, nobody's given up those seats.
Yeah, nobody's selling that seat to him.
Especially to him.
Yeah, good luck, Drake.
Rod Willington? Who are you really, Rod Willington?
I mean, I hope he's not. That dude's driving me nuts. I feel bad for Nurse, though, because he's like put in a no-win situation because you know he wants to turn around and tell him to sit his ass down and shut up.
Well, he saw him, and the video shows he sees him, and he goes, oh, no. So he starts looking up to not have eye contact anymore.
And then he said after the game that I didn't even know Drake rubbed my shoulders. It's like, you know, he wants to come out with a strong stance. Like, dude, be a fan, get the crowd going. Like, that's all cool. Super fans can be fun. Like, don't touch me.
Yeah.
Okay. Like, don't touch me during the game.
Before we play the audio from Buds on Drake, Swigart, I was in the kitchen. I heard Colin naming like super fans. Like, he put Bill Murray there, and Spike Lee was too. Who was ahead of Spike Lee?
Jack.
It was Jack with the Lakers.
Yeah.
Because he kind of started the whole super celebrity fan deal with the Lakers back in the 80s.
Yeah, but how many people had the money Jack had in the 80s? It takes a while to build up that kind of money to be courtside every
Sitting courtside every game.
I'm sorry. I know Jack. I get it. He's synonymous with the Lakers. Spike Lee's number one for me.
He's still number one.
Dude, he trash talks. Like, he gets
into it with
in
the other
their
team.
Grills a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, those were iconic moments of him and Reggie Miller and the choke signs.
There's a 30 for 30 on it.
Right. Yeah. That tells you all you need to know. So, yeah, that's the kind of stuff that I think it's fun that Drake does. Like, him and Giannis needs to be better about not getting offended by it. And don't have your management team come out with comments. Like, shut them up. That's the fun. That's what Reggie Miller did to Spike Lee. He was a pest. He was ranting the whole game.
Did the choke sign.
He shut him up. He said, your team choked. And then Spike Lee had no response. Like, that's the perfect reaction for Giannis to what Drake's doing. If he goes into Toronto in game six and has a big dunk or a big game, just turn to him and shush him, and he's going to sit his ass down.
Who do you think wins this game? Is this going to end up being just home court advantage, basically? Like, Milwaukee wins,
man.
And Toronto wins, and then Milwaukee wins?
It feels that way. The fun part to me is how much pressure is on both situations. Like, Giannis has been bad the last two games. Like, he was really bad. He had 12 points, and he fouled out in game three. If he just has a competent game, they probably win that and go up 3-0, and then maybe the Raptors roll over and die. Instead, here we are at a 2-2 series. But the other pressure, too, is Toronto trying to get to the NBA Finals to convince Kawhi Leonard to stay. Not that it means he will, but if you lose in the Eastern Conference Finals, it makes it a little bit easier for him to leave. And did you see what the rich guy in Toronto did? Some guy's offering him like a free multi-million-dollar penthouse if he stays with the Raptors.
There's a person that's so obsessed with the
Raptors. So obsessed with the Raptors and wants Kawhi Leonard to stay. Said, as long as you play for the Raptors, you can live in this like multi-million dollar penthouse in downtown Toronto for free.
Jeez.
During your time. They're handing out stickers to give, and restaurants are putting them on their windows, like a picture of Kawhi Leonard. And if you have that sticker up, Kawhi Leonard can go into the restaurant and eat for free anytime he wants. There's Uber and Lyft drivers that are doing this, that if you put the Kawhi Leonard sticker on your car, he can ride a free Uber or Lyft wherever he wants to go around the city. Like, they are going all out to keep him. And it just ups the pressure, because if you lose in the Eastern Conference Finals, makes it easier for him to walk out the door.
Something to put a pin in. I really think there's an interesting segment to have. If they do get to the finals and they beat the Bucks, even if he loses, you're leaving an NBA Finals situation to go to the Clippers. And I still say the Clippers.
Think about
that. Because, sure, they're much better run.
Mm-hmm.
They're still the Clippers.
Right.
Like, you love L.A., you're a California kid, I get that, but you're leaving in a final situation. Do we see this? I mean, you just don't see this often.
No, like, Durant's the closest, but that was conference finals.
Right.
He walked away from a conference finals team, not an NBA finals team.
What happens if they win? Do you still leave?
Right, if they win the NBA finals, do you just walk out the door?
It's a weird situation, but he's a weird dude, man. You don't know what he's thinking. All right, Game 5 tonight, Eastern Conference Finals. We're going to make our first stop on the Daily Ticker in Milwaukee, get the feelings of the Buck fans out there, and then also go to Tampa for the Daily Ticker. The story from Jason Stark, not a pretty picture for the Rays and their future with their stadium situation. The Daily Ticker next.
In this wide world of sports, some stories can slip through the cracks.
Now, before we do this, let's go over the ground rules.
This is the Daily Ticker, where Dirt and Sprague visit the insiders that are covering the stories you've heard about and some you haven't.
How'd you do that? Actually, I'm not even mad. It's amazing.
The Daily Ticker with Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
All right, two stops to make here on the Daily Ticker on Portland Sports Leader 1080 The Fan. The first one, let's head to Milwaukee and talk with Stephen Watson, the ABC affiliate over there is where he works. He joins us now on the MVP HomeLoans.com Guild Hotline. He's on Twitter at WISN_Watson. Game 5, Bucks and Raptors. Stephen, thanks for joining us here in Portland, man. We appreciate it. I was just talking about in the last segment, this series is so back and forth. Milwaukee goes up 2-0. We think this series is done. Toronto ties it. Now people don't really know where to lean. Some people leaning Toronto. What's the feel around this Bucks team and within the city of this series being tied 2-2?
Well, first of all, thanks for having me on, guys. And I'll tell you what, when this series left Milwaukee last week and it was 2-0 Bucks, I think maybe Bucks in 5, but a lot of people were thinking sweep. So the momentum has certainly shifted, I think Bucks fans are a little on edge right now. I think they're confident that they have home court for these final, two of the three games. But in the end, how could you not be a little bit concerned seeing how the Raptors have been able to really kind of dominate in the ways that the Bucks have dominated all season long, and that's been their bench. It was pretty impressive to see how the Raptors' bench really came alive in games 3 and 4 on their home floor. So it'll be very interesting to see how this matchup plays out tonight.
Well, and at this point in the year, so much of the spotlight goes on the star, and we know that here in Portland with the way Damian Lillard played against Golden State and a lot of people criticizing it, wondering why he wasn't better. And you look at Milwaukee, Giannis getting to this point for the first time in his career, and he had just been steamrolling everybody, it felt like, and then struggled a little bit in Game 3, fouling out. Game 4, missing some free throws, airballing a couple of them. How much pressure is on him, and how much confidence do you have in him bouncing back with a good game at home tonight?
Well, if there's one person in the NBA that is going to, put the pressure on himself and know that he needs to step up, it's Giannis. I mean, he takes his work very, very seriously. He understands the pressure of the moment. As you mentioned, he has not experienced the pressure of the moment. But I do think that if there's one guy that's going to be ready to go from the tip, I think it's going to be Giannis. And Kawhi, I mean, he's been unbelievable. He's been the best player in this series, honestly. He's been the rock for the Raptors. But as I mentioned kind of in my opening statement there, this game is not going to be Giannis versus Kawhi. It's going to come down to who those role players are that really step up. And it's been the bench for both teams so far in the series. But I look at a guy like Eric Bledsoe, who has been extremely quiet in this series compared to the guy that he's been guarding in Kyle Lowry, who, had 25 points in game 4. And this is a guy who's said this morning when I talked to him at shoot-around that his thumb is in so much pain he can barely catch a ball right now. So it's been pretty impressive what he's been able to do in that starting rotation for the Raptors. And I think Bledsoe and Chris Middleton are guys that are going to have to win the Bucks game 5 tonight.
Yeah, Stephen Watson, our guest. He works for the ABC affiliate over there in Milwaukee. Game 5, Bucks and Raptors on Twitter at WISN_Watson. Give him a follow. You mentioned Bledsoe, and I'm glad you did because, I mean, this guy just signed his $70 million extension. He was playing really well. He got, I think, defensive team honors this year in the NBA. He played really well for this team, and you mentioned what he's been struggling with, and Lowry just completely outplaying him, and that's a guy that's dealt with his demons in the postseason. Yeah. What can they do? What can they do to get Bledsoe going? Because I'm with you. Giannis can be great, but you need Bledsoe. You need Middleton to step up. What can they do to get Bledsoe going? Because, quite frankly, felt like they almost benched him that last game.
Yeah, they might bench him tonight, too. Don't be surprised if Malcolm Brogdon gets a start over Bledsoe. I don't think Bud can wait any longer on this. And they paid him. He got his money, and he was worth that money throughout the regular season. I mean, he was the second-best player on the Bucks all year. I know Chris Middleton made the All-Star team, but I think Eric Bledsoe was probably the most consistent player outside of Giannis. And this is what we saw from him last year. Last year against the Celtics, he just kind of fell apart and was not able to deliver on this big stage. And he's honestly the one I'm more concerned about being primed for the moment than Giannis is Eric Bledsoe, because he's shooting like 25% right now in the series. He's a guy that loved to take transition threes during the regular season and loved to get to the rim, and now just looks like he's hesitating. He looks in some sort of funk right now, and he still continues to bring it on the defensive end, but offensively, man, he has been the biggest concern for the Bucks in the postseason, not even just this series. And I look to him as a guy that has had maybe one good game in the postseason. He needs to have his second one tonight if they have any chance.
Yeah, no, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think he's expected to be there tonight. But how would the crowd react if Drake walked in?
I was waiting for that. I trust me, it's been the talk of Milwaukee all the last 24 hours. I don't think Drake will show up, but I think a lot of Bucks fans are hoping that he will, because there's been talks of banning him from the arena. There have been talks of I know Mike Budenholzer made a joke on his conference call yesterday that, you know, Christian Yelich, because the Brewers have an off day, they're going to give him a bat and allow him to take one full swing at Drake while he's on the sidelines. Aaron Rodgers will probably be in the house tonight, so maybe give him a football to throw at Drake. I don't know, but I have a feeling that if he is in the building, he will. They will not give him the opportunity to take the spotlight like he did in Toronto. But I do not think that he will be here tonight. Maybe a game seven.
Yeah, there we go. Good stuff, man. Enjoy game five tonight, Milwaukee, Toronto. Stephen Watson over there, the ABC affiliate in Milwaukee, joining us here on the Daily Ticker. Stephen, thanks so much for the time, man, and we'd love to get you back on once summer football gets back going.
Yeah, I'm happy to whenever. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Yeah, there we go. Good stuff from Stephen Watson. Let's transition now from the on the ticker here from basketball to baseball. There was a really in-depth, long, lengthy piece on The Athletic from Jason Stark talking about the Rays, their stadium situation, their attendance problems. So our good friend over there in Tampa, Steve Carney, WDAE 620 radio host over there in Tampa, joining us now on the MVPHomeLoans.com Guild Hotline. Not a very flattering piece from Jason Stark about the Tampa Bay stadium situation, Steve. What did you make when you read it?
Yeah, you know, it says a lot of negative about it, but a lot of what Jason has written about and what has been written about throughout the country about the Rays stadium situation is not much of a surprise. It's stuff that we here in the Tampa Bay market already know. You know, the attendance is really, really low. It's in a area that is the smallest of any 30-minute drive in any major league market. And that includes, you know, cities like Pittsburgh and Milwaukee that have much smaller populations than the Tampa Bay region. And there's a lot of hostility and animosity between not just the team and the politicians in St. Petersburg, but the politicians between the cities of St. Petersburg and Tampa. I kind of liken it to, you know, St. Pete and Tampa kind of being like Eugene and Corvallis in that sort of animosity. You know, people from Tampa think that, you know, St. Petersburg people are old, and, you know, the joke is that it's God's waiting room, whereas us in St. Petersburg, we call the people in Tampa lobsters because they normally come down from the Northeast and have not figured out what sunscreen is yet. So I mean, this is maybe one of the most complicated situations when it comes to a new stadium, because of the amount of money and the lease, and I should say the use agreement that the team has with the city of St. Petersburg for Tropicana Field, which runs through 2027.
Yeah. Well, and I think the last time we had Giam was when their last project fell through, and it was kind of a bombshell report. Everybody in Portland was keeping their eyes on it. I think recently we've seen Montreal come out with kind of a more aggressive bid, which is another potential site. So for those who haven't followed or haven't read the piece, is there anything new, any sort of update on Tampa and a new ballpark site, location, plan? Do they have anything in the fire?
No, right now everything is all quiet. So what I will say is that there is a piece of land, and I think I talked about this with you the last time that I was on. They've outlawed greyhound racing here in Florida starting in 2020. And one of the biggest parcels of land in St. Petersburg, and it's right basically at the edge of the bridge that heads to Tampa, is the Greyhound Racing Park. And not only do they have that large swath of land, but the Department of Transportation has started to widen the roads that go past it and create flyovers to all of the major highways and the expressway that leads into Tampa. So there's going to be basically no stoplights or anything going from the highways into that area. So it would not surprise me if we come out in the next, say, 12 or 15 months and hear that is now a site that is being considered for a new baseball stadium. It just makes sense because the infrastructure is already being developed. You would be able to keep the redevelopment money, because the Rays right now, with the agreement that they have with the city, if they stay in St. Petersburg, they get half the money of the Tropicana Field site redevelopment. So that's money that they could put into building a new stadium, and that they could use basically as almost like a secured loan to themselves that they could use to help get a new stadium built and when they decide to leave Tropicana Field. But right now, everything publicly is quiet.
Yeah. Steve Carney, our guest, WDAE 620 Sports Radio over there in Tampa, joining us. We're talking about the Tampa Bay Rays stadium situation because Jason Stark wrote a piece about it. He did have a couple things in there. One I disagreed with would, when cities lose a team, it's like a big black eye on the city. Look, I think it's okay to admit sometimes cities may not care about certain sports. Like, football is king in the South. We know Florida loves football. If baseball is not its thing, it is what it is. So I want to ask you, because I've seen you on Twitter and you're at the games all the time, you're tweeting about it, and I see you follow the attendance stuff as well. Do you in your heart of hearts think if they can get a stadium in that area you were just describing, in Tampa, do you believe the attendance would skyrocket? Do you think Tampa cares about baseball?
I think that Tampa does care about baseball. And if you look at, you know, there's spring training sites all around this area. I mean, from Fort Myers all the way up into the Tampa Bay region. You look, there's spring training homes in Tampa, in Clearwater, in Dunedin, in Lakeland. There's plenty of spring training sites around here. So the market for baseball is very strong here in Tampa Bay. The thing is that you're not going to want a 40,000 seat baseball stadium. And if you look, Tropicana Field, if you take the tarps off, it seats 45,000 people. I think that they're looking for something that would be more intimate. You're looking in that 25 to maybe 30,000 seat range without the upper decks. I like the idea of the stadium proposal that they had for that Ybor City site that fell through. I think that a stadium like that would certainly work if you could get it closer to the middle of the population center of the region, because right now it's not in the middle.
Yeah, there he goes. Good stuff. Steve Carney, WDAE 620 Sports Radio in Tampa with the latest on the Rays and their stadium situation. As Jason Stark wrote a piece for The Athletic. Kind of grim, but Steve's still optimistic they can get that done. And they've got a few years here. 2027 is when that lease is up with the Rays and Tropicana. Thanks so much for the time, Steve. We appreciate it, man.
You guys are the best. Look forward to it. Talk to you again.
All right, there we go. Good stuff from Steve Carney and Stephen Watts in Tampa and Milwaukee, our two stops to make. Let's give you some details from that Jason Stark piece on theathletic.com. Really good, lengthy read. The latest on Tampa, because Tampa and Oakland, the two cities, likely to move if they cannot figure out their stadium situations. We'll give you an update on that. Portland Diamond Project type stuff next on The Fan. All right, welcome back in. Dirt and Sprague here on Portland Sports Leader, 1080 The Fan. We got some NFL news and notes to get to coming up. Our Game of Thrones recap. That show is over. The Fab Five coming back, and a fantastic home run call yesterday from a man who is probably just sick and tired of covering a garbage-ass franchise.
Which is a bummer, because he's one of the best broadcasters out there.
He is. I miss him on ESPN Hockey.
Yeah.
He was really good. He kind of was one that wrote me in as a kid to watch hockey. I didn't really care about hockey until I'd hear him make calls. We got some college football news and notes to get to, and then Jonathan Smith's going to be in studio for a half hour with us in the 2 o'clock hour. I wanted to talk about the Jason Stark piece. Were you able to read it this morning?
Yes, the Jason Stark piece about how Tampa is a terrible baseball market.
Yeah, Jason Stark wrote a lengthy one and said, is there hope for the Rays in Tampa Bay? And then he dives into what the current situation is. Look, I like Steve Carney a lot. He seems like a really good guy. He's always willing to come on with us.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if he sounds like a homer to people. I think there's a little bit to that. He likes baseball. He doesn't want to lose
sure.
the team.
Well, and I follow him on Twitter, and he gets into it with Rays fans because he'll tweet out attendance numbers for big series or big games. The first place team, and there's 5,000 people here, and Rays fans will go at it with him. So, oh, it's too far of a drive, or a day game, and they'll come up with all sorts of excuses. So he takes shots on Twitter.
Well, if his, I believe him when he's saying St. Pete, Tampa Bay. If it was like Corvallis and Eugene, which is a bit further than 30 minutes, yeah. But if the stadium was 30 minutes from where you lived, would you go?
Yes. Okay. Not all the time, but
what
yeah.
if it was a first place ball club?
I mean, absolutely. I wouldn't go to 81 games a year and drive 30 minutes each way every day, but yeah, you would find ways to go to games and support them.
Because Jason Stark highlights, they are just, I mean, they're abysmal in attendance. They recently drew 8,000 people.
Yeah, if you take out their opening day, which always does good, they didn't sell it out, but always does good. And if you take out the series against the Yankees and the Red Sox, which are filled with Yankees and Red Sox fans.
Who live down in Florida.
Right, it's all Yankees and Red Sox down there. Their attendance numbers are like barely over 10,000.
So here we go. If you count this season, the team at Tampa Bay has now ranked either last in baseball in tickets sold or next to last for 9 seasons in a row.
Yeah.
And 14 of the last 17 years.
Yeah, that tells you all you need to know. Over the last 6 years, I believe they've become one of the first teams. It's only happened a couple of times in baseball where you have a 6-year stretch where the team is worse in attendance. And over that 6-year stretch, they have a winning record.
Yeah.
And I believe the only other times to have it happen were the Washington Senators way back in the day before they left.
55-59.
And then the Montreal Expos from 98 to
04.
2004.
And then the St. Louis Browns in the 40s and 50s.
Yeah, yeah. If you go that far.
Yeah. They're the fourth team since World War II for this to happen. He also made a good point, and I should have known this, but I just forgot. They have like the 5th or 6th most wins in baseball
For a stretch
since 2011.
I mean, there's only a handful of teams that have been better than them.
Two of them are in their own division.
Yeah, Yankees and Red Sox.
So they've been successful as a franchise. I know it hasn't resulted in a title yet, but they've given you consistently good baseball. But he just I think he makes this look real grim. I mean, because the situation Carney was talking about is what Stark brings up and basically says that is their picture perfect, everything goes right scenario.
This is our spot.
And then even then, they're not convinced their attendance will improve much. And that spot specifically is up in the air. It's not a given. The ownership group doesn't want to chip in more than $185 million.
Yeah.
They do want to make a smaller stadium, but Jason Stark's piece, and I'll put this on the show account, at Dirt and Spray, we'll retweet it with at 1080 The Fan as well, for those that hate our show account. It just doesn't paint a good picture. And although that lease goes till 2027, he thinks by next year, the owner of the Rays could start making threats about, hey, we'll take this team out of here if we don't get what we want and hope that leverage play works.
Yeah, I mean, they're not going to let this drag out until the lease is up. You're not going to go another 8 seasons with this wait and see, maybe we figure it out, not knowing where you're going to be in the future. It just doesn't make any sense for either the Rays or for Major League Baseball. The next power play that both they and the A's have, depending on how the A's situation goes, because I know they're moving forward with kind of studies and environmental stuff with the Howard Terminal site. The next power play, if their dream locations don't work out, is to start using Portland and Montreal as a crutch and just say, hey, we're going to leave. We got cities that will welcome us and they have ballpark situations ready to go. If we move, that's going to be the next step and we'll see if it backfires. Steve might be right in that the attendance number would be slightly better if you had a nicer location and a better ballpark. I don't deny that. I think they would be better than last place. It's just not a good baseball market. I don't like using TV numbers as an example either. Miami got this same argument when they were trying to build their new ballpark. People saying, well, it's just an old football stadium. That's why people don't go. Not a great spot to watch a ball game. A lot of people watch on TV. All we need is a new ballpark, shiny new ballpark, and people are going to come out in droves and support the team. And look, the ownership group hasn't done anything to make fans show up, but it's been atrocious even in year one after a little kind of spurt initially. Nobody goes to those games and nobody generally cares about those games. And this is something that I wish desperately that Major League Baseball was more proactive about. Like, it's just not going to work. Like, maybe you figure out your ballpark situation, but you have Portland that's taken a lot of steps. Montreal just took another huge step this week in finding their new location for a ballpark. Like, if they're ready to go, start the expansion process now and put the heat on Tampa and Oakland. Say, we're not going to let you wait around for 5 years because we're going to give these cities expansion teams because they're far ahead in the process of where you're at.
I'll put that on Twitter right now. Jason Stark's piece. I reached out to him. He was too busy today, so maybe we can get him on down the road. But update on the Tampa Bay Stadium situation. Loaded second hour. We'll start with NFL news or notes. A lot to get to in the National Football League. We'll do it next hour, 2 straight ahead on The Fan.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.